Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I'm joined here in the studio by two politicians who might be familiar to you. We have Steve Rotherham, the former Labour MP and Mayor of Liverpool, and Andy Burnham, who's former British Labour Party MP too and leadership candidate, you may remember, who's now Mayor of Greater Manchester. Hello to you both.
Hi, Claire.
Welcome to Dublin.
Oh, lovely.
Good to have you with us. Now, I know you're here, you're going to address the Institute of European and International Affairs, but you're on a bit of a road trip at the moment with this theme that I want to talk to you about, because you wrote about this in your book, which you wrote together, called Head North. And you set out a vision for a more balanced and inclusive UK in that book. Andy, you have pinpointed a whole array of inequalities you believe stem from the fact that everything flows from Westminster and the establishment sees no good reason to change that. So how does that disadvantage the part of the world where you're from?
Because we've all lived under a very London-centric government. If that's a red government, blue government, doesn't matter. You know, the country's been run in a London-centric way. And, you know, you can see that. When you go around the UK, you see the disparity between the transport infrastructure in London, the South East, compared to the North West. So Steve and I kind of decided to leave Westminster to challenge that and to start to call for a more equal Britain. And I think we're beginning to make some headway, aren't we? I think the voice of the North of England is being heard more loudly now than it's ever been heard before. And we spend a lot of time here in Ireland, Claire, because we kind of recognise in the different parts of these islands, maybe people have something of the same sentiment about Westminster and the way it's always kind of lauded it over everybody.
So you're talking about Northern Ireland there, right? And what's happening with investment?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you go to Northern Ireland, people will feel something of the same. They'll feel the same in North Wales, they'll feel the same in Scotland. And, you know, what we're saying is the answer is probably not to sort of all go our separate ways, but start to join forces a little more and challenge this London centricity that we've all had to live under.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because the nature of democracy, Steve, is that you have elected representatives from all over a country who come then and sit in Parliament. Their job is to represent people who elected them. So how does the imbalance happen?
Well, because we saw it with our own eyes when we were members of Parliament in the Westminster system. And you're there for party first. And we are elected now as representatives of Greater Manchester and Liverpool City Region as place first politicians. Mm-hmm. So we're there as the voice of those people. But we can deal in a very, very different way than the multitude of different things that you have to handle as an MP on a daily basis. So, you know, we don't have surgeries, so we don't have to deal with constituents' issues. But at a strategic level, we can represent our areas right at the heart of government. And so we can get in to see secretaries of state, we can get in to see prime ministers, we can get, into see, for instance, the Taoiseach and the senior members of the Irish government, same as we would do if we went to America, and we have done, and ended up in the White House. You can't necessarily do that at the same level if you're just representing a constituency.
As an MP. When did that click with you?
Well, when we were trying to do stuff on Hillsborough, people will be aware of, you know, Britain's worst sporting disaster was the Hillsborough disaster, and 97 people lost their lives. We were trying to do things in Westminster, but the machinery just wouldn't allow us to do it. So we had to circumvent certain protocols down there and do things in a different way. And we just thought if we had the opportunity to do things at a place-based, people-first way, that'd be better for the areas that we represent.
So your aim then was to move the power base, if you like, to where you were from.
Indeed, it was.
Has it worked? I think it has.
It's work in progress, I would say. But I think it has shifted, Claire. You know, the kind of the energy is in the Northwest, actually. If you come to Manchester, Liverpool, both are more vibrant than perhaps they've ever been. And it was something of a journey for us. We were in Westminster a long time. I was there 16 years. I served in the cabinet under Gordon Brown. But It was when I went to Anfield on the 20th anniversary of Hillsborough. Steve had invited me as Lord Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really go through a bit of soul searching at that time, because here I was in a government that hadn't done anything to correct that injustice that Steve spoke about. But I am somebody who was born in that city and understood how all the people felt about it when I went there on that, and decided to go there on that day. And for us, I think that was such a pivotal moment, because it really brought over to us how we've been often second-class citizens in the north of England, in our own country. And I said in the House of Commons, you know, how could an entire English city have cried injustice for 20 years and yet no one in that Westminster system was truly listening to them? And
did you feel guilty in that moment then? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You know, massive mix of emotions. But I had to basically walk out at Steve's invitation to address the COP, and I've described it as though I was walking to the edge of the abyss between the government I was in and the people I grew up with. And I was looking them right in the face, people I went to school with. And for me, that was like a massive moment in my political journey. It was a huge crossroads. And I took my first steps out of Westminster that day towards the roles that we're in now. And we don't regret it for one minute, do we? Because the UK has to be rewired. This is how we describe it. You know, the voice of the regions has to be heard
but
in a very
surely,
different way.
You know, for many people, Westminster is seductive. You know, you've got the power, you're an MP, you're sitting on the green benches, you could be a minister, you could be leader of the party. Very difficult to walk away from that, no?
No. But you're right about the seduction down there. But I think that's one of the flaws in our political system.
We do miss the Strangers Bar a little bit.
You found another one.
And we have found another one. We found Clarks in Dublin last night. So there you go. But no, I think that the way in which it's set up, that everything is seen through the prism of what happens down in Westminster. And they talk about this Westminster bubble, and it's real. Because or the permanent civil servants, they live in the London area, and the MPs go and stay in the London area. And if they were to get out more and come to the places like Liverpool and Manchester, etc., they'd see that it's not the same for transport or for infrastructure or for investment or for jobs. And so we're able now to represent with one voice, you know, directly elected by huge numbers of people, more than 2.5 million in Andy's case, 1.6 million in mine. But we're able, with some authority, to say that we're the authentic voices of those areas.
Mm-hmm. It's an unbelievable state of affairs, isn't it? In 2025, half the British Parliament is not even elected. And those people in the Lords, by and large, emanate from inside the M25, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, they are the London great and the good, and yet they're a huge role in running the country for everybody. I mean, it's no surprise, is it, that Britain is as unequal as it is, and why the Northwest has, in our view, not been allowed to fulfil its potential. But we are definitely. Pushing things back in our direction now.
We had
Claire,
that.
To illustrate that differential, Andy said, you know, the most unbalanced. When Germany was going through reunification, the differential there in living standards was not as pronounced as it currently is between the north of England and London.
Mm-hmm.
That's how big the gap has been allowed to grow.
Yeah.
And it's not that we're less talented than the North, obviously.
And the Conservatives tried to address this with this levelling up policy. How do you feel about that, do I need to ask?
Well, it was a great soundbite, wasn't it? Levelling up. Who'd be against levelling up? It's like clean air. You're against clean air, you know. So it's how you go about it. And really what they used was the rhetoric, but they didn't put anything behind it. Whereas at least now, we are working with a government that desperately wants to level things up. They're not using the same terminology, but they are looking towards us as being the delivery arm of national government.
So how does that work in practical terms? Like, what has happened since Keir Starmer went in there to tell you that, he does mean business on this front?
We were in Downing Street within 2 days of the general election, all the mayors across England, and they've now brought forward a English devolution white paper. So the devolution deal Greater Manchester has, and we were the first to pioneer this model of running more for ourselves, is going everywhere. So, you know, we're going to see the map completed, to be honest. And do you know what? I just think things will function in a very different way when you work place first rather than party first. And that's what happens with devolution, as Steve was saying. We'll have a different relationship with Glasgow, with Edinburgh, with Cardiff. You know, we'll just work more people to people, place to place. And I think it will just build a more collaborative UK than the one we've had.
So you feel you're being asked, what do you need in Manchester and Liverpool? What are your priorities? Is that what's happening?
We're not getting everything. Look, let's...
Nobody does. But, yeah, but if you're being asked the question, it's a start, right?
I think it is. And also, it's the recognition that we do know what's best for our areas rather than national government knowing what's best for everywhere. Mm-hmm. And working as a collaborative, both in the northwest but across the Northern Corridor, we're representing 16 million people. And it's 16 million people in the north who've been left behind for far too long. I believe if those voices had been heard years ago, perhaps, you know, decades ago, we wouldn't be in the current situation that we are in, where, for instance, to get from Liverpool through Manchester, Leeds to Humberside to Hull takes the same time as it did when Stevenson's Rocket was running. And yet in London, they've just spent millions, billions of pounds on a new Elizabeth line, which is the same sort of length. And there was no end of money being thrown into that project. And we get the crumbs off the table. We just don't think that's fair.
Yeah, and we had the plans for the HS2. And of course, that was pulled as well, wasn't it? Well, the bit that you wanted was pulled.
It was. I mean, we're still fighting for that. And we're still arguing for a new Liverpool-Manchester railway. So we'll continue to make those arguments. And it's, you know, it's crucial, isn't it, to a modern growing economy to have that transport infrastructure. We had a situation that a certain prime minister called Maggie Thatcher took our buses off us. You know, she deregulated all the buses right across England. So we're the first city region in England now to put them back under public control. And Steve will be following the same path. So we're almost reversing the 1980s. We're trying to build more council homes. We want, more public control of the essentials. You know, the north of England was seriously damaged in that period, and I think we have been in decline, but finally it's reversing. Greater Manchester has been growing faster than the UK economy now for the last decade, and it's predicted to continue. And we're showing that devolution is working.
You know, whenever there's a problem here in Ireland, somebody will say, we're the size of Greater Manchester. Do you hear that? We should be able to do this. Maybe you use it in reverse and say, well, we're the size of a small country.
We do. We do use that sometimes, don't we? I mean, I think we're bigger than Wales together, aren't we? Or certainly we're the same size if you add us together.
But do you look at Ireland and go, with your resources, why can't you figure things out? You know, because not everything is perfect here, far from it.
Envy at what's happening in Ireland.
Well, you know about our housing problem, right?
Of
and
course,
our problems
with
our health service and so on.
It's not that there aren't issues. And look, we've got a housing problem in the Liverpool City region, but everywhere in the UK has a housing problem. Look, you see the jobs that are being created now in Ireland. I met some of the real blue chip companies yesterday, IBM and Microsoft, and these are all setting up headquarters in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And I look very jealously at what's happening here, because there will be an AI revolution, and it looks as if Ireland's going to be a significant player in that. We believe that the Northwest, working with Ireland, our friends over here, we can be that bit of the UK that links in with all of that.
Don't take them, will you, please?
Because not your jobs. No, we want to create more jobs. That's the idea.
It's amazing, though. Dublin is such an amazing place. I mean, you know, it's changed so much, hasn't it?
It has,
to our eyes in the last 20 years. We do look over, though, at Limerick, at the elected mayor over there, and we're kind of interested that this experiment, I don't know whether, is it popular here, Claire?
We're still waiting to see, you know, and once people get a chance to assess how that goes, we'll see where we go with it, I
suppose. I just think it'd be a great world when Steve or I could pick up the phone to the elected mayor of Cork or the elected mayor of Limerick, the elected mayor of Dublin. I think we would all just function a bit differently in that kind of world where it's more place first, collaborative.
Well, it certainly does shift the power base, which is your aim.
Yep.
Listen, I wanted to talk to you about Brexit, because I know you were remain in the campaign.
Massively.
I mean, it feels like, and certainly during the election campaign last year, but even now, people aren't really allowed to talk about Brexit and how it has impacted people. You don't hear much about it. It's not very much on the agenda. What is the reality of it?
You don't hear much from Westminster politicians. I think they kind of do feel a bit constrained in talking about it. But we don't. It's been a disaster on every level. I struggle to think of one benefit that it's brought. And kind of it's failed in its own terms in terms of those who promoted it, because they were saying it was all about take control of our borders and all of that language.
Sovereignty.
Well, it's done the opposite. It's weakened control of immigration, because you control immigration. I'm speaking as a former Home Office Minister in the UK. You get control through cooperation, because you have to work with other countries on these issues. The minute you just pull back, I think you put yourself in a weaker position. And actually, we've replaced one type of immigration from Europe with another, which is people coming permanently from much further afield. So it's failed on that basis, but it's failed much more broadly in terms of economic growth, isolation. It's time to call it what it is, which is a complete disaster for Britain, in my view. It's hard to think about how you go back, but at least I think call it what it is and let's start to sort of repair some of the bridges that have been damaged.
Is it fair to say, though, that it's only the Lib Dems at the moment and Ed Davey, really, who are willing to open the Pandora's box even slightly?
Well, Keir Starmer has, though, hasn't he, been reaching out across Europe?
I think. Yeah. I think there's a growing realisation across the political divide, really, that what happened was the greatest act of self-harm probably in political history. And it's what you do to repair that. So the first thing is people don't want to admit it was wrong. So you still get your Jacob Rees-Moggs who'll say, no, Brexit will work. And, you know, how long we've got to wait until it works, goodness knows how long. But they believe that. But then there's not an awful lot of people who genuinely believe that. And if we had the referendum today, it would be overwhelmingly to stay in the
EU.
Think? If we had it today, massively so.
Definitely.
But of course, we're out. So how could we get back in? That's the difficulty.
EU economies in general haven't been doing so well either. I mean,
look, you're doing okay.
We're doing fine. Thank you very much. Look at Germany, though. You know, there's not such a hot story there.
Other issues there, though.
There would be an argument to be had. But I just wonder, when you're talking to the blue chip companies who are based here, are you saying, look, we're not in the EU. There are certain rules that you wouldn't have to adhere to. Do you see it at all as a selling point?
Yeah, we have to look at the positives as well. I mean, as Andy said, there's very, very few. But one of them are that the same restrictions may not be applicable in the UK now as they are because you're part of the EU. So there may well be things in which we could test stuff out. But we would rather work in collaboration and partnership with our friends here and see whether there's the synergies of somewhere in the Northwest, Manchester or Liverpool, and we'll fight over that ourselves. But we think the Northwest has an awful lot to offer, certainly to this side of the island. And of course, I'm going to Belfast tomorrow, and we think that close collaboration between those four, you know, Greater Manchester, Liverpool City region, and Belfast and Dublin is going to be essential in the future.
Yeah, because as you said, Andy, I think it was yourself who said it, Belfast and Northern Ireland seem to suffer in the same way as Northern England do. Do you see that really clearly?
Yeah, you do. When you go there, you see the lack of investment in the UK everywhere you go. So, again, we went to, we've been to Glasgow and we've been to, you know, Cardiff and we go to North Wales. And you see the same things that are happening on our streets happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a decline in the very fabric of society. There's been that austerity that has cut local councils' ability to do the things that you would expect them to do. So, They basically empty bins and do basic services at this moment in time. They want to do much more, but to do that, they've got to get a government that will invest in them and support them. And hopefully, in the next few years, you'll see that through a Labour government.
There's a tragedy to it, really. I was saying to you when you came in, I was in Glasgow at the weekend, you know, with my family, and we were in the city centre. And by about 4 o'clock or 4:30, we made a judgment call that we needed to leave the city centre. Which is sad, isn't it?
Really?
It is sad.
Beautiful city.
It isn't the Glasgow that, you know, I remember. I think it's definitely had better times. I think you come to the Northwest, I think you would experience something different. Mm-hmm. Both Manchester and Liverpool are pretty vibrant, actually. I mean, in some ways, we've got some of the energy that London once had, you know, coming out of the pandemic. I think a lot of people...
You know, people talk a lot, and it's the same in Dublin. You know, do you feel safe on your streets? Do you hear that in Manchester, that people are frightened in the evening times? Or is there that sense that you can go out as a family at 7 o'clock in the evening?
Oh, you know, we come from a part of the world where, you know, these are tough northern cities in many ways. But, you know, from my point of view, you know, we have a big focus on strong policing. You know, it's it's something that, you know, we don't sort of hold back from, you know, very much invested in our police force. We've repaired the cuts. So, no, you know, Manchester is quite vibrant. You know, it's not the Manchester of the 1980s, where you would have felt a bit like that, to be honest. Whereas now it's different. It's not without its challenges, like any other city. But you know, I think what we all feel really strongly is these places can be so much more if given the right investment, as Steve was saying. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of sad, really, that they've been left without the infrastructure that they need. But definitely the political tide is turning on that.
Claire, just to do my bit for the Liverpool Tourism Board as well, because Andy's espoused quite rightly about Greater Manchester, great city. Liverpool's economy is growing because of the visitor economy, and the visitor economy is worth £6.25 billion a year because more people are choosing to go there because it's one of the safest metropolitan districts in the whole country. Mm-hmm. Now, when you hear things about what happened in Southport, that's very off-putting to people because they believe that it's dangerous or violent, and it really isn't. I mean, if you go there, it's party city. It's a wonderful place. It's got beautiful architecture. It's got a lot of features that you'll find as you're looking around. You think, oh, that's a bit like Dublin.
Either of you need to encourage Irish people to be Manchester well,
especially
or,
for the
or
football.
Liverpool. Yeah,
we're
exactly.
Very grateful, but we love seeing people over. And there's a new stadium just opened in Liverpool that the mayor has very kindly supported. Even though I am the mayor of Greater Manchester, I do support the blue half in Merseyside. So
he's never told me that before.
There's another reason to visit now.
Listen, the leadership, I touched on it earlier on. You went for it in 2015. And Steve, Andy, you went for it. Steve, you were the campaign manager. Yeah. Is that off the table in the future, Andy?
The candidate was fine. The organisation. It was the other way around. I don't rule out a return to Westminster at one time, you know, in the future. Who knows? But I very much feel that what I've done in the last 8 years, because it's been 8 years now that we've been in these positions, has been more important in terms of my own political journey, but more in terms of what we wanted to do to change the way Britain is. I consider it still unfinished business what we're doing here. You know, we're really trying to make devolution of power out of Westminster irreversible. Maybe, who knows, I don't know what the future will hold. I wouldn't rule it out. But, you know, I've kind of enjoyed my last 8 years much more. And the thing is, when you leave Westminster, you leave the kind of party whip system behind, and you can just speak for the place, for the people you know. You can speak with a freedom and you know, more direct way. And maybe that's why, you know, perhaps the mayors connect a bit more.
But Steve, maybe if he was controlling the party whip system, he might be more inclined to be in favour of it, right?
Possibly. But I think the thing that has happened in those intervening years since my failure for Andy's candidacy.
it was the candidate, not the organisation.
But I think the thing that's happened is that that experience of being out of Westminster, of seeing how the mechanics at a very sort of granular level need to work to get projects off the ground and all that is brilliant. It is something that I think has changed, Andy. It certainly changed me and my outlook. But it makes you a better person if you were to ever get the chance to go back into Westminster. Not that I will ever do it.
You never will, but Andy might. Listen, I better let you go because I know you're busy today with the Institute of European and International Affairs. But thank you both for coming in. Great to meet you. Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham will take a break.